If ever there was someone who was able to pivot their career into a lucrative business, it is Marcus Neal. Listen to how this basketball player's life changed when he became professional and how it changed again when he was able to turn passion into profit and use his know-how to train everyday people. This is the success story of someone who has achieved success beyond the court and is an inspiration for anyone who wants to keep building beyond their sports career. So, Marcus, thank you so much for joining me today.
No problem, Irina. It's a pleasure.
So, I wanted to start from the beginning.
Okay.
And ask you to paint the picture for us.
Okay.
What was it like growing up in New Jersey for you?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, unfortunately for me, my grandma raised us. It was five of us, my brother, my sisters, and two cousins.
Mm-hmm.
So, growing up in New Jersey, where I'm from, actually, Trenton, was tough.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't trade it for the world because it taught me a lot. It taught me a lot of principles in life now.
Give me an example of tough.
I was the youngest of boy in the house.
Mm-hmm.
So for everything that I had to get, I had to fight for. Then also my neighborhood, I would say the murder rate was like very, very high. So you had around like 5-6 deaths a month. So certain areas we wasn't allowed to go to. And being that I was the youngest boy in the house, my brothers and my cousins only allowed me to go to the basketball court.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of was imprisoned, but for a greater cause.
So they were protecting you?
They was protecting me, yes.
When you grow up in that environment, do you realize that that is different to other places? Or do you just think, well, this is just life. This is how we all live?
Not for me, you actually realize, you know, because literally, like, if you get on the bus and you drive, you know, 10 minutes down the road, you can see where it's, like, much nicer, much safer. And unfortunately for me, when I was playing basketball and I was going certain places, you can go places and see, like, well, you know, these kids, they got, like, 3 or 4 nice pair of shoes, and I couldn't afford it. So I think it was, you can kind of see and feel it.
What were you like as a child?
Well, I was very, very, I was an introvert.
Mm-hmm.
As a child. I was always driven.
Mm-hmm.
Since I was the youngest boy, I did a lot to just be an enigma and stay out the way.
Mm-hmm.
So they won't whoop on me. So, and I would say I was always determined, always like goal driven.
Mm-hmm.
And an introvert.
Why did your grandma raise you?
Because my mom was kind of drugged by my dad's girlfriend. So she went to a psychiatric house, and then during that time, my dad left, and my grandma raised us.
Was that normal for you, or were you pretty aware that that's an extraordinary situation?
I think it was normal, because mm-hmm. I didn't know no difference.
Mm-hmm. You
know, so for me, it was just another day. I think now, and as I got older and I can look back and kind of see other families or other environments, then I compare it to what I went through. I see now that was like not normal at all.
Mm-hmm.
But growing up, I felt it was normal.
How does that affect a child?
I think it affects a child in a good way and also a bad way, depending upon perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel in life, someone's situation is not like mine's, but you will face your trials and your tribulations. So I was forced to respond to that.
And mm-hmm.
I believe sometimes you can have your hardest life in the beginning, the middle, or the end, but sometimes it's best to have it in the beginning because you get to learn a lot of life lessons. So for me, I would say it affect me in a positive and negative way. I would say more positive.
But you're only able to say that because we're looking back, right? At the time, surely you didn't have the maturity to say, this will be good for me.
In a way, I did.
Okay.
Because I came across like a lot of coaches in that time, and people from my environment, plus minus, they always in that situation, give or take. So I had coaches who kind of like took me under their wing and was always like preaching to us and always telling us like, hey, you know, make a difference for the community, make a difference for your future family. And they was preaching this to us when we was like 10, 11, 12. Mm-hmm. So it kind of embedded me like, okay, if I go home and my grandma don't have money for us for certain things, or, you know, when I wanted new sneakers, I couldn't get it. Or when I wanted to eat certain things, I couldn't get it. So that kind of like driven me to say, okay, one day I will be in that position. So I started preparing from like then, I would say.
Why do you think so many people are in that position?
I think it's a chain of poverty. Mm-hmm. And also I think it's the lack of education.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think it's also a form of like modern day slavery.
Elaborate.
Because a lot of people from the area, you know, you get government housing.
Mm-hmm.
Then they give you a little stipend for like food. So it forms complacency.
Mm-hmm.
But then you don't realize like, okay, if you go outside, you go down the road a little bit, it's a better life. And you can never propel in things if you never see much. For me, I was blessed because I was able to see a lot through basketball. You know, but the average kid in them environments don't see that. They just see what they see, you know. So a great life to them is getting a new car, but then driving right back to the projects.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that's the way our people are enslaved.
If your 8-year-old self could see you now and see all the things that you've achieved, what do you think that would mean to him?
I think he would know.
What do you mean?
Because I kind of knew I would do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like my grandma's favorite. So she always told me like, yo, you're going to be different. You can do it.
Okay, let's talk basketball.
Okay.
So we see so many stories of successful professional athletes where sports kept them out of trouble. Can you explain how that happens and why it works so well?
Oh, whew, that's a good question.
Were you listening?
Yeah, that's a great question. So for me, it helped a lot because, again, I was the youngest in my family, and I remember trying to be like in the streets. And my oldest brother broke my jaw. Literally, when I was like 13, broke my jaw in half. And then afterwards, he told me like, hey, I better never not see you in the streets again. Like, you have something going for yourself. Make sure that you always stay at the court, practice, be better. So that outlet for me, it helped me in so many different ways because I got a lot of friends who just wasn't as fortunate to be that good in sports.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and many try. A lot of them is either sports, rapping, that's going to be a way we'll make it out. But I was fortunate enough to get out with sports. So I think, you know, looking back, it helped me big time. It helped me in like many ways. You know, because, again, a lot of people wasn't as fortunate, and I'm grateful for the opportunity that I was to stay off the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And actually have people show interest in me. You know, because it may sound funny, but, you know, I remember being 13, 14 and playing and having coaches that really liked me and say, hey, I'm going to buy you new sneakers. My grandma had money for that. Or, hey, we're going to go on these AAU tournaments. When I was growing up, I remember traveling to Las Vegas, Florida, so many different places just because of what I can do with basketball. So that gave me hope. Like, hey, you know, I don't have to do what others are doing in my neighborhood. I just got to get big. I just have to get good at that basketball.
So it was a way out for you?
Yes.
When did you fall in love with the game? Or did you ever fall in love with the game?
I fell in love with the game. When I got good at it.
And okay, so not right away.
No. When I got good at it, I fell in love with it. So I fell in love with the game when I got good at it. I would say my love for the game died when it became a business, when I had to go to college and when I had to go places to play. Mm-hmm. Because then it was more serious.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But obviously, I really fell in love with the game when I got good at it. When I started to really recognize, like, hey, I'm pretty good at this. That's when I fell in love with it.
It allowed you to travel and see so much of the world that you wouldn't otherwise have been able to do. How did those opportunities change you as a person?
They changed me a lot because I was able to travel so many different cultures,
mm-hmm.
and see so many different things. And just going back to like the first question you asked, one of the first questions you asked about when you wanted me to elaborate on like modern day slavery,
mm-hmm.
people from the neighborhood just don't know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I remember the first time I played professionally overseas and they had brunch. I didn't know what brunch was.
Mm-hmm.
I literally didn't,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just the food was different. You know, and going to different cultures and just seeing how they think. And then when you connect that to like the success they have in life, it's like, whoa. And that's the main thing that I really love that basketball gave me.
How did that connect for you in your head? Like you would be traveling the world, doing all these things, experiencing all these cultures, but then you're still the kid inside that wants, you know, just to get out, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you put in certain situations, you're forced to grow up fast and you're forced to adjust to what's given to you. Mm-hmm. And for me, at that age, it was already, okay, Marcus would be the way we all get out of our situation.
Mm-hmm.
So it felt good just knowing that, okay, my family hoping me to make a way for them. You know, so just to go back to your question, I wasn't really thinking as a kid no more at that point because I didn't have nobody really covering me where I can be a kid.
So when we speak about this sort of thing, a lot of people say that their motivation comes from making their mom and dad proud. And in your case, you can't really say that. How did you find the motivation or where does it come from? If there's not somebody that you're trying to make proud.
Yeah, so my motivation pretty much came from survival.
Mm-hmm.
So I was always like motivated to like survive. And I think that was a mechanism that came across me. Because I was put in situations where I had to like survive. And mm-hmm. I had like friends and that didn't survive. That's either, you know, in bad situations now. So for me, I would say my motivation was always like survive. So I was always like on edge, even to this day.
But there's a difference between surviving and succeeding, isn't there?
Yes.
Yes. So what's the difference for you?
Succeeding for me would be when it's all said and done and when I put my mark on this earth for my kids to really have to never go through what I've been through and to have a great, great, great life. And not just like financially, I would say also spiritually, I would say emotionally, I would say friends, to for them to be well-rounded individuals. Like that's success to me because I don't think that any kid should have to go through what I've been through.
Mm-hmm.
And not to say my story is so bad, but there's other stories who are even worse. I just think that that would be succeeding to me. That's the only thing I really want. And besides that, to just like help people because, you know, I wouldn't be where I was if I didn't have people like help me.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I was 12. I had a guy just come up to me in the park and he was like, hey, you're like so good. I got to connect the coach and you got to go. The next week I was in North Carolina. When I was in North Carolina, the head coach there, he took me under his wing. He helped me in so many ways. And then from there, like my college coach, he took me under his wing. He also helped me in so many ways, you know. And from college, my first year professionally, I had like a coach, that American, he helped me in so many ways. So I didn't have my parents, but I feel like God always put people in my life to really, really help me. And if I didn't have these people help me, I don't know where I would be. So as long as I can like leave this earth one day knowing that like, okay, I made life better for my kids, and also I'm helping people because I feel like I got to give back, that's the world to me.
So you're very much about paying it forward.
Paying it forward?
Yeah.
Meaning
that somebody paid for you, so you're going to pay that forward to the next person.
Exactly.
Know? Yeah. Was your 4-year degree in movement science one of the best decisions you made for your career? And what advice would you give to young athletes who are dedicated to sport, but they're not sure if a degree is necessary?
Well, yeah, I kind of knew like, okay, because I got uncontrollable energy, like literally. And I knew like, okay, when it's all said and done, I got to be doing something where I'm like moving.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to really, really get into movement science. And I thought like, okay, when it's all said and done, I would get into like training. I didn't know it would be going this well, but I knew, okay, it would be what I would do. So I would like recommend it. Looking back now, after all the experience that I have, I would recommend kids, to be honest, to just like learn a number game.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's way more important than a degree.
Fair enough. Why do you feel bad saying that?
I don't feel bad.
You know, you've got a smirk on your face like you feel bad saying that.
No, I don't feel bad. I just honestly, I think the number game is more important.
Okay, tell us about the business that you've built today.
Okay, which one?
All of them. Go for it.
All of them?
Yeah.
Okay, pick one that you know.
Tell me about your gym.
So it started, I would say, about 14 years ago. I only took basketball jobs where I can be doing an internship
mm-hmm.
in exercise science, or I was somewhere where I can pick up a couple of clients and learn. So a lot of different places I played, I had access to different coaches where I was like learning from and building towards. So I already kind of was like planning this towards like the end
mm-hmm.
of my career. And me and the family made a decision to come here to Luxembourg. So I had trained about 4 or 5 people, and I got really, really good results here. And then my wife kind of said, hey, let's turn this into like a business because you're out here helping people anyway. So mm-hmm. you need to get paid for it. So we agreed. So at that time I was training, I believe like 2 or 3 clients. And literally from like one day to the next, it like blew up.
Mm-hmm.
And I will only say it was the grace of God. I think God just blessed me. Because I'm not that good. But God just blessed me, honestly.
Why do you think it worked so well for you, apart from that?
Because I work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I will work 22 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And most people won't. I think if you're knowledgeable of it, then I think it's very easy for everybody, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'll find your clients that fit to you, but most people won't work for a long period of time. People can get motivated and say, okay, I can do this for 6 months or a year, but I have a survival mentality, so every single day I can go. And I know I can do this for the next 20 years if I choose to, because mm-hmm. I'm just a walker naturally, not like watching a motivation video of Rocky saying, you can do it. I'm just who I am as a person. So I say that. And then another thing I would say is that people who had interactions with me, whether good or whether bad, know that, okay, my heart is into it and mm-hmm. I really care. So, you know.
What's the end goal?
For the business?
Mm.
Good question.
What are you working towards?
Far as the gym?
Yeah.
I do that because I enjoy it. So I don't really have an end goal when it pertains to the gym
mm-hmm.
because it's not something that I necessarily like want to end. You know, like that gives me life.
Mm-hmm.
When I can like kind of see somebody come in and they have like goals, and then it's like, okay, let me try to get your goals. Okay, I don't feel I'm good enough to get your goals, so go to one of my colleagues, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think just seeing people become better gives me life, and it gives me a reason to wake up. So when it becomes to that particular business, it's not, I don't really have an end goal towards that one.
Let's talk about the transition for an athlete from playing sports and being at the center of everything in their life to building a business. What's that transition like, and why do so many athletes struggle with it?
It's a great question.
Mm-hmm.
I think athletes struggle with it because, one, they're not surrounded around good people.
Mm-hmm.
Two, their identity is their sport.
Yeah.
So they don't really know how to like connect from that. And sad to say, but you know, like 80% of athletes like don't really have humility. So they don't know how to make that adjustment to like, okay, I'm a star, to picking up weights for people.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, if you're used to just being the center of attention and everyone just like, whoa, and clapping your name. And then again, you got to like make that change. I think that's very difficult for athletes, I would say. And then two, I don't think most of us get spoiled so much that you can never really see that, okay, that day is going to come to an end.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a great college coach, like so great. Like people viewed him as like over the top or like very like harsh, but like I loved him because the first practice he had, he told us, he said, hey, it's 15 of you guys in here. It's 450 NBA jobs. I don't see none of y'all making it. It won't happen. So you better get yourself a degree. You better position yourself to succeed in life. So I would think he gave us like so many different jewels, and he preached that to us every single day, where it was like on the back of my mind, like, hey, prepare for when that day come where you can't bounce the ball no more.
Mm-hmm.
So when it came, you know, he used to make jokes. He used to tell us like, hey, some of you guys are taking me for a joke right now, but I'm telling you, when 10 years from now, I'm going to drive to McDonald's and I'm see you working there. He says, some of you other guys who like listen to what I'm saying, you're going to build businesses and you're going to do great things because you have to use the basketball as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
So I would kind of say Coach Jack.
So you always had your eye on what was going to happen next?
Always.
Yeah.
Always.
What is your ethic when you're coaching kids basketball?
Depends on the kid.
Okay.
Because they're all different.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's a very stressful moment for a kid because you have the coach that would do what's best to win.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the parents that want to see their kid do the best, which is completely natural.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the kid who just love a sport.
Yeah.
So when the kids come and train with us, it's my goal to personally to find out what's going on, and then I can attack that and get the most of the kid. But most importantly for them to have like fun. But then any kid that I get that's past like 16, 17, then we start really preaching, you know, buddy, you got to prepare if you want to make something out of this, because the whole world is a lot of kids that's preparing now. And so let's get a bit more serious.
When you coach, is your coaching layered with all the things that other people taught you?
Yes.
And do you literally hear the different things that you were taught and they just come back to you?
Yes.
Tell me about it.
So, like I had one situation, I go back to my college coach, you know. He would tell me, keep working.
Mm-hmm.
Keep working. And this was like my first year of college. And I only played like 2 minutes. And he was like, keep working, keep working, keep working. And that was tough times for me because I came from high school where I was like the best player on my team, one of the best, to like him saying, keep working. So I had to be patient. I had to get better. I had to get stronger. I had to get faster. And I had to like persevere through that time, which was like tough,
mm-hmm.
you know? So then I'm on the other side where he looked at me. He said, okay, I told you, it'll happen. Now you here, Marcus. Now it's your team. You know, so when I train some of the kids and I see, especially the ones who have like potential, I'm like, okay, keep working, keep doing it. Let's go. Let's push. Like I had like one kid now that made the national team.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody in the country paid attention to him. And he got so much better now. And he'll get way more better. And that just, it was like a testament, like, okay, that's what my coach taught me. And I can see it in him. So it's great.
How do you keep these kids down to earth? Especially when they do well like that.
Some you have to keep down to earth. Some you don't. You shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Depends on the personality.
Mm-hmm.
Like some been down so long that the moment they feel up, they will work harder since they feel up.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get some kids who, if something goes well, they'll stop working harder because they think they arrived and they think they're that good.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just being able to adjust to the people.
Mm-hmm.
I meant to the player.
Mm-hmm. How distracting is it when you start to do well? In your experience?
For me.
Yeah, for you.
When I start to do well?
Yeah, how distracting does it get?
It doesn't get distracting. It's very fearful.
Okay.
Very fearful when you start to do well, from my opinion.
Why?
Because people know you, then yeah. They're coming for you, then you can't rest, you can't relax, you got to compete, you got to push, you got to survive. So for me, it's, you know, success bring envy, but then you have people that's happy for you. It brings a lot, you know, mm-hmm. But when you're not doing well and it's crowded, it's cool. So for me personally, I'm kind of the opposite. Like if I'm not doing good, I'm very calm and cool. But if I am doing good, I'm like, man, you got to stay on your P's and Q's. You got to stay alert. You got to wake up before everyone. You got to like stay at it.
It's the recognition, isn't it? When people recognize that you're good, that starts to threaten you, right?
Yes.
What's been the biggest challenge in your life? And how did you overcome it?
I would say the biggest challenge in my life would be my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I overcame it because I feel, you know, God was by my side. And two, I just forced myself to like learn life lessons to just make a way.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look back at like all of that, and the way I'm really, really glad, because when I face challenges now, like I'm at peace and I'm clear because I know what I've been through.
Mm-hmm. What would you like to be your legacy?
For my kids to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And to know like, wow, my dad put us here.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much it.
You don't want to be remembered for anything?
No, just for my kids.
Okay. How has building your business enriched your life? Because that's a whole new skill set that you had to pick up. How did that enrich your life? Apart from making you money.
Well, I met wonderful people.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned a lot from coming across so many different people. You know, being that we had some very, very nice, powerful people train with us.
Mm-hmm.
And just getting close with them, I'm able to like learn a lot of things that I wouldn't have necessarily known if I didn't have the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And that's enlightening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and especially here in Luxembourg, because you got so many different cultures. So you run into so many different perspectives and so many different ways of seeing things. You know, and I'm a person who loves to like soak in advice and just seeing a different way
mm-hmm.
of seeing things. So yeah, I would say that would be the main way.
Okay, so we had some questions come in for you.
Okay.
Half of which I don't understand.
Okay.
So I'm going to read them out as they've come in.
Okay.
And you can help me decipher what they mean. So With how many non-JICL players should LBBL clubs play in the future?
It's difficult to say because some Luxembourgish teams want only two can play.
Mm-hmm.
But then other teams don't have a lot of Luxembourgish players that they feel can compete to win championships. So some teams get three, some teams get four, and the best teams can get two Luxembourgish players. I mean, two non-Jigger players because they have the best Luxembourgish players. So then some teams argue that, you know, we should stay with two so our Luxembourgish players can develop.
Mm-hmm.
But from my perspective, personally, it's you know, most people, most Luxembourgish players who play here has jobs on the side, and they eventually stop playing and going to do things differently. So to spend all the time investing into Luxembourgish players, that in return, they won't necessarily seek out to be professional basketball players. I think
mm-hmm.
it would be good to give that opportunity to three or four non-Jigger players because these players can kind of make a living from that.
Mm-hmm. And build a whole life from it.
Yeah.
T71 Didlange says they have to have three in the roster. Also, the other clubs have two. Once they say they want to have three, then they will say they nevertheless have two.
Okay, yeah. So T71, I think they want to have three players just in case of injury.
Okay. What's the difference between playing in Vector in Germany and Wolfsdange?
Oh, the level. The level in Germany, especially in the Bundesliga, is probably like 10 times higher than Wolfsdange.
Mm-hmm.
It's a professional league.
Mm-hmm.
And Wolfsdange is, yeah.
What evolution should the LBBL take? Should it stay an amateur league or not?
I think it should stay because the economy here is just too good for Luxembourgish players to just play basketball when they can have a great job.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it wouldn't be fair to the game of basketball to say, okay, let's try to take a higher scale and players here couldn't commit to just basketball.
Mm-hmm. What expectations does a US player have when they come to Europe?
Win, play good, or go home.
Sorry, what?
So, yeah, you either win,
yeah,
you play really good, or they will fire you and send you home and bring another player so fast.
So many people are curious about, like, the routine and the process of a US player coming here to play. Talk us through what happened when you first moved here.
Oh, so it's like you get an agent.
Mm-hmm.
Your agent call you, hey, I found a couple of teams who like you. You choose your team, you come play. And depending on, like Luxembourg, if you come here, it's cool because it's not, you know. I think it depends where you go. Because if you come from America, let's say to like France or Luxembourg or Germany, things are a bit different. But, you know, me personally, I didn't feel no difference. But when I went to play like in Greece, it's like very like, it's so different. Or when I went to play in Cyprus, or when I went to play in Macedonia, or when I went to play in Slovakia. So I think each experience is a bit different.
Mm-hmm. But what happens? So your agent tells you.
Oh, yeah. He tells you like, okay, we got your job. You choose your team, you go.
Mm-hmm.
You instantly feel like homesick. Everything is different.
Mm.
But then some jobs you have like a 1 month trial period. Mm-hmm. So you kind of under a lot of stress, like, man, I got to play good so I can like make this trial.
And you don't normally know other people when you come, do you?
No. But sometimes in some countries, the Americans, the foreign players stick together.
Okay. So you quickly build friendships.
Yeah, because that's like all you got.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How homesick did you get?
I didn't get homesick because I was away from home since I was 13.
Okay. Did you miss your normal routine? And
I miss macaroni and cheese my grandma used to make. That's what I missed.
Okay. The pressure to stay on the team and to be kept in, talk me through that.
Oh, that's tough. That's really tough. That's tough.
Is it hard to enjoy yourself knowing that that pressure is always over you?
So hard.
Yeah.
You know, and then again, how I say, okay, the Americans stick together, but you know, like, okay, me and this guy going to play against each other. And sometimes it's sad just knowing like, okay, your friend, the team he's on, they're 0 wins, 4 losses. So like if they lose, one of them going to go home and you're playing against him that mm-hmm. night. And you're like, okay, I feel sorry for you, but you know, somebody got to go home and it ain't going to be me.
Yeah.
So that's tough. The pressure is tough. But what's good about it, though, is that once you kind of get past the first couple of years of your career, then the respect level grows so high.
Mm-hmm. Does that pressure ever ease then?
No.
It never goes away.
No. For me personally, no.
Yeah.
But then you have some players who don't feel pressure at all, and it helps them. Like, they don't care. They just go play.
Yeah.
And they do well.
What happens on a team when you have people who are not team players then?
Oh, good question. You address it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say 90% of like rookie players are not really team players because they got to get like good stats
mm-hmm.
to like for their career to grow.
Mm.
So I would say a healthy balance would be needed. But that's more of a coach issue.
What's the best team you ever played on?
In Europe.
Mm. Or anywhere.
Oh, on this team that traveled all through China.
Because
mm-hmm. it was like so many different players from mm-hmm. so many different elite leagues. And we traveled all through China to play their national team. So we played their national team in like all the different cities.
How do you play well with players that you haven't played for a long time with? Like, how do you create that team atmosphere?
I would say the principles of basketball, and once a coach find the good fit,
mm-hmm.
then it just instantly gel.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when it comes to like more of like a professional team that you're going to stick with, it takes time. That's why they have preseason, usually like a month, 2 or 3. It takes time. But besides that, I would say just finding the right fit of players.
Mm-hmm. What do you want young kids to know about becoming pro?
Work smart. You know, I'm kind of against like a lot of the commercials out there that's like, if you work hard, you can be like LeBron James. That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
like, I'll be the next Jordan if you wear these socks. That's not true. You know, you know, but I believe a guy like Stephen Curry now, who's like amazing. You know, he's not bigger than most. You mm-hmm. know, his athleticism is like most, but that guy worked.
Mm-hmm.
And he works smart.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you, whatever sport it is, if you identify one thing that you can do really great, it's going to increase your value. And when it comes to like sports, you got to find a way to be valued. And that will push you ahead.
Someone came in the other day for an interview, and we were talking about success. And we were saying about how actually to be a successful person in a business environment is still less sacrifice than it is to be an athlete, because there's no downtime, you know. Sure, you've got off season, but we're saying like a business person can have super busy week, and then Friday night they go out with their friends, they decompress, they go out, they drink, whatever. They can actually enjoy a relatively balanced life. For an athlete, the physical sacrifices that you have to make, how does that build up, and what are the consequences of having to give up all that at a young age?
I think, you know, you're so competitive during that time, because when you're an athlete, you're competing against others, that you don't necessarily realize what you're giving up.
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of can view it as like an honor, because a lot of people can't do it.
Mm.
You know, okay. So you'll find like a lot of like players who's not their best, or not in their best shape, or isn't as pair as much, because mentally they wasn't tough enough to do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then the downside of it is that, you know, when I came to like Luxembourg for like the first 4 or 5 months, I was like in really, really good basketball shape. Then after that, it felt good to know, like, man, they only practice 3 times here. You know? And it's only 2 professional players per team. So it was less stressful, I would say. So I would say, and then also, you know, like, it depends what type of business you're running, right? Like, if you're building your business and you don't have, like, no investors and you got to, like, think and you got to push and you got to make things, like, work, that's no downtime.
No.
You know? Yeah. But if you have investors and you start with a plan, then okay. So I kind of beg the difference.
Nice. Last question.
Okay.
What would you tell your 18-year-old self if you could go back and give him some advice or just have a chat with him? What would you say?
All the money that you had in college from Pell Grant, you should have saved that and bought a house with it. I invested it in something. That's all I would tell myself.
Okay, nice. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you as well. It was a pleasure.
Okay.